growing up when I was younger, there was not many female role models to look up to, especially in rugby. And I just think it comes down to the exposure that there was a lack of. Didn't know it was possible to be a female rugby player, and it wasn't possible to be a professional one at that. You're listening to the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line, and I'm Zoe Allcroft. I'm Zoe Allcroft, and I play for Gloucester Hartbury and England. I play second row, or could be called lock. For locks, you can either get a more mobile lock that usually gets up in the line out, and you can have a bigger, more physical lock who is used to push hard in the scrum. I'm probably more of the mobile lock that gets up in the line out, works hard around the pitch. That's probably what second rows are known for, just getting the heads down, getting stuck in to pretty much every ruck that they can. Growing up, I was always quite a shy kid, but I would never back away or shy away from any sort of challenge. I was super, super sporty. I think at the age of about 4, I started doing ballet dancing, and then it went on to cricket, football, hockey, rugby. Played the flute for a number of years, played the piano for a number of years, just kind of like testing out all the waters to see my interests, really. But yeah, anything I'd kind of give a go at. And then, yeah, eventually sport took over. It was just kind of something that I was most passionate about, and I just really liked the competitive side of it. I've always been such a competitive person, right from being so small, I can remember having loads and loads of competitions with my brother, even about who has the most room in the car, and would end up fighting because I'd want more room than him. Just silly little things like that. But yeah, that's competitiveness has always been in my family. I grew up in Scarborough, which is a small seaside town in North Yorkshire. I literally live about 5-10 minutes away from the beach, so it was always good. I had an older brother, Jonathan, and he always used to take me down to the beach. We'd do some rugby, we'd do cricket, we'd run, we'd do absolutely everything. The first time that I kind of had a taste of rugby, basically my brother played football for years and years and years, and then I think my mum had kind of had enough of the sideline sort of chat, so she was like, why didn't you give rugby a go? So, and my dad had always played rugby, so he had a good connection with the Scarborough Rugby Club. So my brother used to go down on a Sunday morning to training, and I would always get dragged along to watch, playing on the sidelines, that sort of thing. And then one of the coaches just said, does she want to join in? Off I kind of went in, and I was a little bit apprehensive at first. I was the only girl that was involved there. I just threw myself into it. I remember one time we were up in Whitby, and they had this one boy, they used to call him Cannonball. I just remember, because I did play fullback when I first started, and he just broke the line, and I was like the last line of defence. I was thinking, oh my goodness me. And I just like chopped him low and all the side, and I was just like, oof. And everyone was just shouting Cannonball at this boy, and I was like, I've got to get him down. Just took his legs away, and he went down like a ton of bricks. So. Playing with the boys, I always felt really welcome in my team at Scarborough. I think a lot of the boys actually had a bit of admiration, like they were always cheering me on, and I never got picked last, which was always thankful for that. And I think the coach that we had there is actually no longer with us, Keith Marshall. He was just amazing at driving the kind of ethos as a team, and like what the rugby standards and what it is to be part of a team. He drove the work ethic in me that hopefully I see on the pitch today. Even though I wasn't allowed to be part of the team when I was over 12 years old, I still felt as though I could go back and to the club, and it was always very welcoming to go and see them.
Hi, I'm Johnny, and I'm Zoe's older brother. Growing up, we had a very competitive relationship. There was always times where one of us wanted to win, and generally would end in tears if the other person didn't win. It was a very good relationship between us. We always had fun doing sports together, even though we had that competitive edge between us. So on the pitch, she is pretty aggressive. I would say very emotional, but she can keep her emotions in check. That is very different to what she's like off the pitch. She's very relaxed and very chilled. Her leadership qualities have definitely developed in the last 4 or 5 years. She's become a lot more outspoken, a lot more driven in terms of creating a leadership group and a culture within the team. I definitely think whichever environment she's part of, she's definitely well respected. What makes me proud to be Zoe's brother is the journey she's been on. She started off as a pretty quiet person, and throughout her development as a rugby player and as a person, she's come out of her shell, her confidence has grown. She has become an example to lots of young people everywhere, and even me personally, just the way that she's put time and effort in and dedication into becoming better as a rugby player and as well as a person is a true example and something that many people around the world could look up to.
Sarah Beckett, one of my good friends at Gloucester, she always says that, Zoe, you're the most on it, not on it person I've ever met. Just because, like, on the pitch and anything to do with rugby, I will be on it, I'll be on time, I'll be really with it, like, know all my detail. Then off the pitch, I am, honestly, some people would call me a space cadet probably, but I'm a bit more careless and that sort of thing. So I think those two personalities do come out differently. And I think just for rugby, it has taught me that I do have that switch. I do have that drive to go in. And I think it comes down to the competitiveness that I've had from a young age. I kind of say I have two sort of different personalities on and off the pitch. With sort of rugby, I'm quite, like, I'm very focused, I'm very, very on it. I've got a good drive, and I think that as soon as I step on that pitch, I'll say what needs to be done. I won't back away from anything like that. And as well with my actions, I'm very forward in that, like, I'll always be the first to things just because I'm eager to do that sort of thing. And then I'd say off field, I'm probably a little bit more reserved. I probably not speak as much in meetings just because I am a little bit shyer. But as well, when I do speak in those meetings, then people probably know that it's a meaningful thing that I'm saying rather than just talking as well. To be honest, growing up, I've never really thought of myself as a leader. In age group, I was never kind of put ahead as to do any leadership sort of roles. I think the first kind of taste I had of it was at Gloucester Hartbury when I was about 20, 21 years old. Kerry Large had stepped down from wanting to be captain. So I kind of took the reins, probably because of the way that I play mostly. And I think the girls just looked up to me as kind of leading by example through my actions more than anything. Obviously, I got my first taste of captain in England a few years ago against USA, and I obviously realised I had still a lot of learning to do. It's okay, because I think leading is something that you're never fully perfect at. I used to be in a team talk, and I'd probably be saying things that I don't really mean or that I haven't quite intended to say. It hasn't come out sort of right just because I haven't thought of it. I've just said it because I felt it was the right time to speak in the huddle. I think obviously it is different when you're actually on the pitch and you're in the moment. But then again, I think everyone's so focused that if you say real short, sharp things, then it'll go in and the messaging will go in. I think that's how I like to deliver my message. On the pitch, obviously, I do come out of my shell, and from minute 1 to 80 in training, in the gym, I will always put my body on the line. I'll always give 100%, and I do lead through my actions a lot. At Gloucester Hartbury, I co-captain alongside Mo Hunt, who obviously is a great person to have in the team, just to create that environment that everyone kind of wants to be in. Everyone feels safe, everyone is really enjoying their time, everyone's open, and they trust the people around them. I think that's really important to have in a team. The Gloucester Hartbury captain, that came from my teammates voting me in to do that, so that gave me the confidence that, oh, these girls actually want to listen to me, they want me to lead them. You've got to take confidence from that. But also that there were times when, like, even now I do think, oh my gosh, am I a leader? Like, I don't speak as much as other people. But I think I have kind of realised that I can lead in so many other ways than just speaking. Like, whether that is through putting your arm around someone or through just driving standards in training, driving standards in the gym. Me, myself as well, just making sure I'm the best version of myself. And there's so many different types of leaders that you can be. It's not always the people that shout the loudest. You can be an introvert and still be a leader. The first time I got asked to captain England, it was actually in COVID times, and we were staying just down in Worcester, and we were about to play USA. And Simon Middleton, who was our head of rugby at the time, rang me and said, we're really happy with where you've been going at the moment. We know the girls like respect you, and we'd love to ask you to be captain for the weekend. And I was just shocked. I was just not expecting it. It took me aback a little bit. And I was didn't have any words at the moment. I was yes. And then I went to go and see him after, and he just kind of described, like, you just have to be yourself, go out and perform like I've been doing the rest of the tournament. So that kind of put me at ease a little bit. And then kind of obviously in the night, I was like waking myself up about, oh, what I'm going to say in the team talk beforehand. And then I had this big spiel that I was going to say, like really motivational, and kind of got to it. And I kind of muddled up a few words. And I was thinking, oh God, just get it done now. So it probably came out 100 miles an hour. But as soon as I stepped on the pitch, it was just all comes quite natural to me. I had to do the post-match interview. I'm terrible, terrible at interviews. So that was my most nerve-wracking bit. I think I kind of broke down at the end of it because it'd been such a big week building up to it. I was like, oh God, I can relax now. So I'm very proud that I got the chance to be able to do it. And I think it really gave me that confidence to be the leader that I am today. I'm part of the leadership group in the Red Roses now, and I think it's just about how we can help the girls to be in the best in the world and hopefully winning in England 2025.
First half, and France are being truly dispatched at Twickenham.
I'm Maud Muir. I play for Gloucester Hartbury in England Rugby. I would describe Zoe Allcroft as hardworking, ferocious, and crazy. She's honestly so crazy. I've never met a crazier girl than Zoe Allcroft, both on and off the pitch, yeah.
I'm Megan Jones, and I play for Leicester Tigers and the Red Roses. Zoe Allcroft on the pitch, relentless, fierce, hardworking. Off the pitch, funny, crazy, and humble.
Matthews, right through the middle. Have they got one more in them? Passes it out. Powering through, England score their second. And it is Allcroft who touches down on her 50th cap.
My mum and dad come down to every game, especially England. They'll be at all games. They've been out to New Zealand the last 2 years. They're very supportive. Obviously, when I was 12, I had to find a women's team, and my dad used to drive me an hour and a half across to Leeds to be able to play each week, and even further afield than that when we had games in Manchester and Glossop and things like that. They've been real key drivers in my rugby success. And Luke, who is my fiancé, he's obviously very supportive as well. He's very into his rugby and coaches Leicester Tigers. Women, the forwards, we played them actually our first game of the season. So we kind of spoke a little bit before about how it was going to be and stuff like that. Obviously, we had a strict rule that we don't speak about each other's lineouts in the house. Like the week leading up to it, there was like a little bit of to and fro, mostly from our families, to be honest. Like, I think they're like to get in the mix with it. The morning of the game, he still made me breakfast, so that was still good because he usually does that on game day. And then I think about 3 hours before the game, he sort of left and did his thing, and then I left and did my thing. And I didn't see him until I was just about to go on the game, and he was right, leaning on the pad right next to where I was like warming up to go in, and he just made me really nervous for some reason. I don't know why, but I had a little chuckle to myself thinking, this is the weirdest thing ever. Because obviously, like a lot of the time we like speak about everything to do with rugby, like what's gone on in the week, that sort of thing. And we hadn't had that communication that week. It was a little bit weird. And then unfortunately I actually got injured in the game. I don't know if he was a bit like squirming on the side sort of thing. But yeah, he came and gave me a hug after, and when I was in the physio room, so that was how that ended. So maybe it's a bad omen that he actually watches me and that we don't speak about it. But he's very supportive. He can be at as many games as he can if he's not coaching. He's always giving me little tips like, you can do this better, you can do this better. And I'm sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't. So. Me and Luke actually initially met outside a club in Gloucester. It was kind of ironic because I'd been kicked out of the club and he wasn't allowed in the club. And I'd actually lost my phone at the time, so I went up to him and asked if I could borrow his phone to ring my friend. And that was my first encounter of Luke, and then didn't see him for a while. And then he came up to me in the library, bearing in mind he'd been there for 5 years at uni, and this was my first year back down at Hartbury because I transferred from Northumbria. When he came over and asked me how he logged on to his university emails after we'd been there for 5 years, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, is this guy a plonker or what? but that was kind of where it first left off. And then I was injured at the time, so I would always be in physio, and it would always be in there too. And I was thinking, how does this guy know I'm in physio all the time? And then when we finally got together, he said that he did admit that he used to look in the book and see when I'd booked in and then book himself in as well. So our neighbour in COVID used to watch us out the window because we'd be practising. I'd be stood on a ladder and he'd be throwing the balls to me. He's actually very good and he's very supportive in everything and always gives me tips whenever I need them. He'll come out, he'll do my conditioning with me, he'll do my gym with me. So me and Luke are going to be getting married in June this year. It's actually a week after the Premiership final. And if we win, then I will be bringing the trophy with me. So, but that's only if we get there and if we win it. Got a long way to go yet.
My name's Luke Stratford and I'm Zoe Allcroft's fiancé. First time I saw Zoe was in Gloucester, nightclub, night out. And then properly like in the libraries around college, and she just seemed like a real nice, bubbly girl. Very like shy, to be fair. She was really like, she wasn't very outgoing or, well, that's what I seemed to think at the time anyway. Very, very humble, very grounded. Yeah, her dedication is crazy. And I saw that from the start. Like off the pitch, she's so chilled, real funny, always wants to be like the joker. But at the same time, will be very just happy just to sit back and let everything sort of go on in front of her. But and then on the pitch, I think totally different. Like, I mean, she has moments of being shy, like maybe in her leadership, but she just leads by example. Like, she's not one that's going to talk loads and shout at players. Like, she's just going to go around, do her work, and turns into a bit of a beast, you know. She puts her head down, cracks on. At the same time, like, just an unbelievable professional. Like, it's crazy how much dedication she's got into her work, her like, application to rugby, and the way she is so driven by success and like how humble she is at the same time. Like she still speaks about like, oh, getting named in the Six Nations squad, which she still gets surprised and like worried about when it comes to contracts and when it comes to selection for a training squad, let alone a match day. So it's just amazing how she's so humble yet like so driven at the same time.
Johnny Wilkinson was a massive hero role model for me. I think just his work rate and his drive for perfection was just something that was like no other and made him one of the best in the world. Sometimes in rugby, it's so important to just have that consistency and like to keep striving for being the best. And it just really stuck with me. It does sound silly, but I do have this little tiny knitted doll of him that actually doesn't look quite like him, but my friend's gran knitted him for me when I went down to Hartbury when I was 16 years old. And it's not because I'm obsessed with him, but it is because I'd put him in the bottom of my rugby bag and he's just there as a constant sort of reminder that everything is all right. So basically, I always think so many things change on game day. I just have this one little knitted doll that's always a constant reminder that just to calm down, it's just a rugby game, get out there and do your thing. And I just put him in the bottom of my bag. He never really makes an appearance out, but yeah, it must be smelly down there, not gonna lie. Growing up when I was younger, there was not many female role models to look up to, especially in rugby. And I just think it comes down to the exposure that there was a lack of back then. You couldn't see it. So like, I didn't even know it was possible to do that. I didn't know it was possible to be a female rugby player, and it wasn't possible to be a professional one at that. I think the first time I kind of met a female rugby player was Maggie Alfonsi and Danielle Waterman Nolly down at Hartbury, and we'd done a divisional competition down there when it was under 15s, and they kind of caught player of the tournament and they gave out these medals or whatever they were, and that was kind of the first time I'd got to meet a female rugby player. And then I had spoken to Nolly that camp about potentially trialing to come to Hartbury to do my studies alongside rugby down there, and she kind of just like explained a little bit about herself and like her drive and why it would be good to come down to Hartbury. And I think at that moment I was kind of like, oh, I could maybe play for England one day. Then I hopped off to Hartbury, I did. So I was coached by Nolly for a few months before she actually left. a lot of the Red Roses that you see now, a lot of have come through Hartbury, and I think it kind of comes from her drive that she built there and her ethos that she built around that. Whilst I was at Hartbury, I was at a competition in Lichfield, and that was the first kind of time I met Mo Hunt, Emily Scarrett and Sarah Hunter. They walked around with these cards that they got signed. So I got them to sign all of these now. I still have them now. And I always say to her, oh, Mo, I've got this. Because Mo's one of my best friends now, which is kind of crazy because obviously she was someone that I'd met and was thinking, oh my goodness, that's Mo Hunt. And now she's one of my best friends. For them to be able to come to our tournaments and to be able to see them and see them at such a young age, that was kind of the first glimpse that I had, and it just kind of made me think that it is possible to be able to do that, to achieve these things, and that really gave me the drive to carry on and hopefully one day play for England if you put the hard work in and you stick to all these little things. So we're in the Autumn Internationals. I got nominated for World Player of the Year. I don't think I kind of actually knew what it meant when it first came out. And then we were back at Gloucester training and we had a message saying we need to get there early because Mo's got some interview that she has to do. And I mean, that's kind of normal for Mo because she's always doing little things. So I didn't really think anything of it. And then Maggie Alfonsi was at the front, like speaking. She was saying, it's been a really good year for women's rugby, but there's one player individually. I was just sat there like absolutely oblivious. And she was like, World Player of the Year is Zoe Alcock. And I was thinking, oh my goodness. And then she made me get up in front of everyone and do an interview. And I was like, oh, I have nothing to say right now. So kind of stammered on the spot. But yeah, it was an absolute massive shock. But obviously an absolute massive privilege to be able to get that. And then, yeah, it was just kind of a sort of surreal moment in finding that out. And yeah, it was unbelievable, really. Thinking about it, I still probably don't quite believe it. I always say I think it might be something that I reflect on more once I've actually finished playing rugby, just because I know that there's so many unbelievable girls out there playing rugby who could have probably won that trophy also. I think in reflection, like, it put a lot of pressure on me. Actually made me very nervous, like every time I went out to play, because I was thinking, oh my goodness, everyone's going to be saying on comms, like, World Player of the Year. Like, if I do a mistake, they're going to be like, oh, why is she World Player of the Year? There's so many unbelievable women's rugby players out there that the standard just improves year on year, and I just need to keep pushing on. A mindset is a really big thing in rugby, even in training, because if you're not ready to go out on the training pitch and give 100%, then there's no point in you being there. When I think about inspiring the next generation and being a role model, I really think about it on kind of game days. And when you see all those young girls in the crowd, like there's so many just waiting for you at the end of the game, wanting signatures, photos. That's when I really think, oh, it's really important that I kind of do play my part in inspiring this next generation to build women's rugby. And I'm probably not the best on kind of social media, sort of like Instagram and that sort of thing. But I think it is important to build those platforms for those little girls to be able to see it as well, because obviously that's part of their life, being on Instagram and those sorts of things. So I think the visibility on there is also really important. I think it's really good that we do travel over the whole of England and not just in one place, just to be able to reach out to people in the north, which is really important to me because I'm a northerner and rugby has not been the easiest up there for my upbringing. So making it really easy for girls to go down to the local club in the north and be able to pick up a rugby ball is really, really important to me. As well, like, I like to do my part. If I can ever get down to Scarborough Rugby to help the girls out, I'll go and do a little session for them. We want to keep building the sport even when I'm past it and cannot even walk anymore. Now, I think at Scarborough Rugby Club, they have about 30, 40 young girls, and they've got a full women's team as well now, which is absolutely amazing to see, because there was literally me with about hundreds and hundreds of boys when I was younger. So it's really amazing to see. And even now, the clubs that I kind of went through, like Moulton and Norton, they've got a girls team now. West Park Leeds, they did have a girls team when I was younger, but it's just grown and grown, and now they've got a women's team in the championship. So it's just really, really good to see that it is growing, and hopefully I've done my little part in those clubs to hopefully encourage lots of young girls to go and pick up a rugby ball. Coming up next on the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line.
But I made this decision that I was going to jump over the bridge jump to the dark side. I remember my dad, he sat me down and he said, look, and this is a proud Welshman, by the way, saying this. He said, look, if you're serious about this rugby and you want to progress it further, you have to do everything you possibly can to put yourself in the best position.